How do you do anything after that? My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group, and that's the West Cadet Group in Jacksonville, Florida. We are an active, enthusiastic group. And if you want to visit us on the second Monday, that would be wonderful. It's our Christmas party, and the famous John H. is our speaker. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor. And I am an active member in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love this program. And Jane, thank you so much. I'm going to get into all a little bit of that because I just, you know, it's just part of my story and about the loves of my life and what has happened. But anyway, one of the things I want to do is thank our previous speakers. Lily, I don't know if, I hope everybody got to hear Lily. She is absolutely a kick in the pants. And she is just absolutely funny, tragic, and she is just an amazing, amazing woman. And she did, steps 4 and 5 for us as well. I'd like to thank my fabulous son, James, for steps 1, 2, and 3. And I'd like to thank Joe for steps 6, 7, 8, and 9, or whatever you did. 7, 8, 9. Whatever you, they were kind of messed up for me the way they were. And I just have to say this. Joe and Tammy have been such a big part of our lives in Jacksonville. And we got to do a couples group together for all the years till Dave got sick. We got to do a couples meeting with them. And it was just such a joy to be able to be in there, to be with them, to share with them all the way down to our toes, and to just be able to have that experience with you. Just amazing, amazing people. And now let me see, am I going to forget anybody? Ralph, of course, did our... Ralph, he's going to talk afterwards. Ralph! You are so amazing. I've known you for a long time, bud. I've known your brother even longer. A long, long time. And it's so good to be able to start sharing this. He came up to me one day and he says, "My brother Ronnie knows you, and he doesn't even get out as much as I do. I don't know why I've never met you." And we just have been able to hook up with each other as we have along the road. Probably the thing that has touched me the most this weekend is being able to do the panel that I got to do with my husband and with my kids. And it's been a long haul for my husband. And you were here, and let me just tell you something fantastic. This is a big deal for Dave. I came back from a birthday party, which I'm going to talk about too. I came back from a birthday party. Dave was up getting ready. And the big deal is sometimes that's not easy. And a lot of the friends that help us since Dave's got six thinks this stuff about him being late and dawdling and all that kind of stuff is because he's been sick. James gave him the name, the King of Dawdle, maybe 15 or 20 years ago. But he was up and at it to get down here this morning. So, honey, you rock. I think coming to Woodstock South has just absolutely put a new thing in you. It has just given you a new spirit. Thank you, Dick. And Dick and Barbara, got a long haul together. Long haul together, and known you a long, long time. think I met you the first time I spoke in Atlanta. And that's been a long time ago. We were still living in California. So these are not new relationships. They're not new relationships. And that's what you get to do. And if you're new in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've got a lot of beautiful family recovery, but you know something, everybody doesn't get that. Everybody does not get that. But there is a family here. There is a family right here that we get to be together. And you have a home group, and that's a family. I say my speaking family. I get to go on the road and get to see people that I get to see and catch up with and get to be friends with. And then you have your convention family. The people get together and we all get to be together and see each other. It's a love fest. It's all about love. And that's what Dr. Bob tried to show us. It's all about the love of God and the love of each other. And that's what Chuck used to say. We have one problem, and that is the conscious separation from God and man and each other. We have one solution, conscious connection with God and each other. That's all we're doing here, is connecting, because in and of us is God. Wherever we are, God is. People, I don't know about you, but God sends His message through His people. He sends His message. Another tradition at Woodstock South is I have a sponsee that celebrates her birthday. And ever since I had the nerve to go up to Dick, all the way back in Callaway Gardens, because there's some people that just don't like it. It's just not good. You know, we're not following the rules. And I went up to Dick and I said, can I give my sponsee? At that time, she would have been, 15? 15, maybe 14? I said, can I give my sponsee a chip? And he said, absolutely. Well, I've already given her a chip, but I want you all to meet Deborah. She's been coming with me every year. And the first time we did this, I flew in from Bellingham, Washington, and she was a person that picked me up. Or Seattle, yeah. That she picked me up. And after that, it's been a love affair ever since. So I just, at any rate, my job today is to talk about 10 and 11. And first of all, did I forget anybody? I didn't mean to. I hope I didn't forget anybody. My God, I love Tammy. Tammy, you are lucky. You're the luckiest man in the world, Joe. You're the luckiest man in the world that you have Tammy. We're all lucky. That's what I say about my son. I got to tell a story, James. Because it makes me so proud of Jane. My son had a rough go for a lot of years. But he had three kids, and he felt like it was really important that he be there and raise those three kids. Sometimes I just couldn't stand what was going on in that marriage. And then one day, we go to a conference, and he'd heard Jane's tape, and we go to a conference, and he came to me and he says, you know Jane Dwyer? I said, yeah, I know Jane Dwyer. And he says, gosh, she's really nice. I really like her. And then the next thing, you know, history, 6 years later, 6 years later after that, she ends up single, and he ends up single, and he calls and says, hey, Mom, I'm going to come visit you. Now, he no sooner gets off the plane, can I borrow your car? I'm going to go have coffee with Jane. And they've never been apart since that day. And one day I was out walking Charlie, or one of the dogs. It was Charlie, because the others had gone already. I was walking one of the dogs, and James said to me, he paid me the greatest compliment. He said, Oh my God, Mom, I have fallen in love with my mother. And I said, because I used to make the joke, you know, it's like my kids married me drunk. I used to make that joke. And, of course, that's not true, but I used to make that joke because I was a mean drunk. I was not a nice drunk. And I was that kind of drunk, and there is a solution. I was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And, you know, I would love all my kids, kiss on them, and, you know, just hug them up. And I'd take a drink of alcohol and be shoving them across the room, or, as James says, pulling his hair. That's why he's bald, because I pulled his hair out. And they never knew which mom they were going to find. It was either going to be the mom that was going to be loving, or it was the mom that was going to be really mean. And I'm just so glad that's, I just love to watch it. I love your love affair. I love to talk about your love affair. And, my husband's here this weekend. And last year, as I said, when we did the panel, I was here and I was pretty nervous and a wreck, really, because I had left him and with someone to take care of him, and they didn't take care of him, and then she even had a dog, and my dog hated her dog, and so that didn't work out, and nobody wanted to tell me. But I get home, I got a big hole in the wall where he fell through the wall, which hasn't been fixed yet. We just got a plant in front of it. And and it wasn't the same. And this year, Dave's here. And Dick says, is Dave going to come? And I said, yes. And he says, well, then he's going to be on the panel too. I love you for that. I love you for that. And then Dave got to take the longest sobriety. So I just want you to know that you can have 42 years of sobriety, and it's still, the miracles still keep happening, and it still keeps going on. And it's all, and I guess one of the things that I love about Jane and James is that they are in love, and they act in love. They show their love. I mean, sometimes it's a little embarrassing, but you have to just watch them. I mean, it's hilarious. But that was Dave and I, and I loved it. We were so in love. We still are, but we were in that love when we got together that you can't even stand it. You just love each other so much, it just hurts. You love each other so much. I mean, I love Dave so much that I left my husband and my two kids. Now, they were grown. I mean, he was 18, and my oldest son was 20. I mean, they weren't babies. But I was so in love, and Dave and I left Texas married, but not to each other. I mean, we were just, so I'm just here to tell you, there's a lot of rules in AA. I have broke them all. The only thing I have not done, well, I haven't, you know, harmed anybody like physically and all that stuff, but the only thing I haven't done is I haven't taken a drink. Because all the stuff I did sober. I had affairs in AA sober, and as a result of that, I don't share this much, but I'm going to share it today. As a result of that, I ended up having an abortion 2 years sober because I could not bear for my children to think I was pregnant. I still carry an enormous, enormous amount of guilt about that. And that was my acting out sober, sober. So one of the things that I know is that we've all got things that have happened to him. But one of the things that I can stand here and say today, as I am standing here, and as far as I know, unless there's something back there in a blackout, I don't have a single secret. I don't have a single secret. Nothing is secret. Nothing there isn't. Some way or another, somebody knows it all. All of it. My worst feelings. My worst feelings. The things that I feel sometime today that make me so upset with myself. and what I think and what I do. Makes me, how could a person say that, who's loved by God, who's loved by so many people, how could I behave like that? But I do. So I know that I got a lot of work to do, that it's still in progress. I'm going to talk on steps 10 and 11, but I cannot talk on, oh, you know what, I left my glasses in my purse. James, could you get my glasses out of my purse? One of the things that I cannot talk about 10 and 11 without I go back to 3 and talk about 3. Because what I'm going to try to do in 10 and 11 is I'm going to continue to take inventory, and I'm going to continue to admit when I'm wrong, and I'm going to continue to make amends immediately. And I can't do that unless I go back here and realize the person that I really am. So if we go back to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 62, this is the person I am. Selfish, self-centered. That's what that we think is the root of all my troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Self, self, self. One of the things that I think is amazing, and I don't know if some of you are new in here, maybe some of you have been around a long time, and there's something that you would really like to clean up. Maybe you can't clean that up. Maybe you can't clean it up now. But what I have found out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is we get to do do-overs. God lets us be able to have a second chance. We're all getting a second chance at life. We've gotten a second chance. We're the people who ought to be dead but aren't. I mean, most of us have had 9 lives. Just so many tragedies that we've had in our life. But we're sitting here sober. And how many times I take that for granted and get into today. Self-pity. I sat there with Paula a few days ago and had a real huge moment of self-pity. And the self-pity is that my life has changed so much. My life has changed so much. But this weekend, the thing that gives me my penicillin and makes me well is one of these conferences and getting with these people. As soon as I walked through that door, we had been driving for 6 hours. I walked through that door and I was lit up. It's just like somebody just set me on fire. I started to feel the people. People started running up and hugging. And I've been doing this since I was first sober. And the first conference I went to, I felt the same way. I felt the same way. And I ended up at 3 years of sobriety. We had this group of people in Texas. And we went all over Texas, just kind of like we do in the West Connect group. And we started going to meetings. And Texas has, where we were in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, has a lot of AA clubs. And what we used to do on Friday and Saturday night is club hop. And that's what we called it. And we go to one club, and Texas has a lot of speaker meetings. So you go to a lot of speaker meetings and hear a lot of speakers. And we followed a guy around by the name of David Aronofsky. And everywhere he spoke, this whole group of people followed him too. And I was at a conference in Austin, Texas. And I was living in Hearst, Texas, between Dallas and Fort Worth. And I heard this woman. And her name was Dottie Harris. I heard her, and I was 3 years sober. And I said, if I ever, ever get anywhere where that woman is, I will ask her to be my sponsor. And lo and behold, Dave came home. We had moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we neither one liked it very much. And he came home and he said, I got a job offer in California, in Santa Monica, California. He said, you want to go? And I said, let's go. And I didn't even cross the state line that I didn't call the intergroup. And I said, do you have a number for Dottie Harris? And Dottie Harris was my sponsor for 35 years. And she died an absolutely amazing woman in this program. She died with 50 years of sobriety. We gave her a party for her 50 years. Her AA birthday was Christmas Day. We gave her a party for 50 years, and she died in May. I was at the Orlando Woodstock, and she died that weekend. And an amazing adventure. And I'm sitting here. I don't know if the girls are still here that are also my sobriety sisters that are sponsored by my, today, Rena Kane. She is my sponsor. And she is an amazing woman. And those of you who know her, and God has a way of just placing. He placed her in my life before Dottie died. It's just, and I'm talking to my friend who also is having that situation happening to him. And he said God's already placed somebody in his life that is going to be able to pick up the slack. So I've always, my entire sobriety, I've had a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor. And one of the things that I like to say is thank God I'm sponsorable. I'm sponsorable. And I've always sponsored. And I'm really grateful that I've got women here tonight, today, this morning, that I sponsor. And women they sponsor. And it's just, it's the kind of the thing we get to do. I know Joe, and he had all these North Carolina people, him and Tammy. And they always have these kids. I mean, they're the best parents. You know that, Mikey. You know they're the best parents. I mean, you know, but your dad's always got, and your mom's always got another entourage of kids. And this weekend I come, and sure enough, first thing I meet Tammy and Joe down in the restaurant, a whole table of new kids, because they're up in North Carolina now, halftime. It's amazing, amazing. And that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to have these families, and we get to have these healings. And we get to do that. And what is at the core of us is selfishness, self-centeredness. And then it starts 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, self, 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 self. So we get to do do-overs. I was a parent and that abused her children. I never could say that until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I knew that the reason I didn't even know an alcoholic when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody I had been with was an alcoholic. My parents aren't alcoholic. I didn't know an alcoholic. And I ended up in this detox center with people from jail, prison. They were divorced. I mean, I couldn't even believe these stories I'm going to tell. What story did I have to tell? I get drunk and I beat up my children. That's what I do. I get drunk and beat up my children. And how do you talk about that? And what would happen is I was kind of drunk. You come to, and then you see these little kids, and you see the fear in their eyes, and you see the disappointment. And it's so terrible that you can't do anything but take another drink because you just can't stand the pain. You just can't stand the pain. And when Joe was talking, I get it. I get it, Joe. You couldn't stand the pain. Little Joey was standing there. He couldn't stand the pain. And I understand. But by God's grace, my son's sober 35 years. We grew up in AA together. We grew up here together. It happened just like I wished it would happen. I had said, oh, come on into AA. We're going to walk this happy destiny together. And lo and behold, he came in another place, and I was in another place. And he found his tribe, and I had my tribe, and we've grown up together. I was only 6 years sober when James came into AA. That's all. We've got to grow up here together. And I haven't ever talked about this, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit. I always knew that my oldest son had a lot of problems. I knew he had a lot of problems. And I really didn't know what. He certainly didn't look like act like an alcoholic. I knew he had a lot of problems. And a year ago, it's going to be 1 year, he called me on the phone and he said, "I'm going to rehab." And I said, "For what?" And I was shocked. It was his brother. But it's great. You know, and I think that I just look at him and I am in amazement that how do you keep a secret that long? 42 and 35 years. It is, but he is an amazing man. And the good news is I always had this amazing relationship with James. Just had this fabulous relationship with James. And I'd go to California and I'd see my oldest son and he'd see me but he'd never call unless I called. And thanks to God and AA and all that's going on, I get a phone call once a week, sometimes twice, from my oldest son, and he always tells me how much he loved me. So if you're sitting here waiting, if you're waiting, Joe, if you're waiting, just don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle, because you never know. I was 41 years sober, and he's 59. So it's always possible. It's always possible, and that's God's grace. The thing I don't know and the thing I'm not in charge of is God's timing. I'm not in charge of God's timing. I came into the room after Deborah's breakfast and Dave was up dressing himself, getting ready. That is because he's lit up from this weekend. Normally, he can't do that. It's just, God is so good. God is so good. There's some amazing promises throughout the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the ones that I love the most is it talks about us getting close to our employer, which is God. We're going to have a new employer. And established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves. God, is that a blessing? Our little plans and designs, more and more we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. One of the things Paula said to me the other day is that she comes from one of the most tragic childhoods I have ever heard. She got sober when she was 17, and her childhood was so tragic that she ran away and was taken in by a religious organization. I think it was the Catholic Church. I'm not sure. Because her life was so bad. And she got this program at 17 years old. And I watched people, and I told her, I said, "You know, Paula, some people, it will destroy them. Other people, it will make them stronger from having come from that." And she says, "Polly, there's only one way that I can stay not feeling sorry for myself, and that is I got to find out what I can do for somebody else." And I get it. I've suffered depression all my life. And I didn't even, and when I was in 1990, I read a book called The Language of the Heart, which Bill wrote. And he talked about depression. And I know today that the only way I can fight that is to work with somebody else. I can read this book till my eyeballs fall out. But if I don't get out of myself and work with another alcoholic, I'm going to die. I'm going to die of self-knowledge for me. And does that mean I don't read this book all the time? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. All the answers are in this book. Every answer. I found an answer in The Language of the Heart by the same author, Bill W., for me. So it's all here. But what I need to know is I can't spend any time thinking about me. I can't think about me because nothing good comes of that. I think about myself and it turns into self-pity. And step 10, it says, this thought brings us to step 10. And it follows the promises. It says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. And then this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Step 10 is you don't wait till step 11. You don't wait till you retire at night. You do retire at night if you forgot something in 10. You catch up. Step 10 is the 24/7 step. We do it all day long. I'm going to make mistakes all day long. I better be calling myself out all day long. I have had a lot of step 10 issues since Dave's been sick. I have learned that people get very impatient if they're caregivers and have to work with somebody who moves a little slow and doesn't go as fast as I want to go. And I have been known to do things like look at Dave. And I'm telling you, it happened. Did everybody know I forgot his belt? Okay, I forgot his belt. His pants literally fell off Friday. And we were laughing in the bathroom. We got back. And I said, Dave, if that had been me, you guys would still hear me screaming. And Dave said, yeah, that's how you would have handled it. And I'll get Dave, start getting him ready for an appointment. And these are the things we have to do. And that I have to do to call myself out. I'll start getting him ready for an appointment. And I told you James named him the King of Doddle. That's not a new thing. It's just 99 times worse now. And he's got to stop and play with Charlie. He's got to do all kinds of things. Or he can't quite get ready. And so by then, I'm 79 years old and 42 years sober, and I'm standing there screaming, why can't you get ready? This isn't even my effing appointment. Hysterical. That's who I am on a daily basis. Do I need these steps? Do I need this program all day long? Do I need step 10 all day long? Dave and I were going to Founders Day. This was a long time ago, too, because Ryan has just started signing. It was just because he was still a baby. And I totally remember that because there was a fabulous incident about it. And I was so happy we'd found out Ryan was deaf. And anyway, all of this we were on our way to Founders Day. And we were in Chicago and we couldn't get out of Chicago to get to Akron because of weather. And I am having a fit at the counter. I'm going to speak Sunday morning or some, you know, I'm going to be a speaker at Founders Day. And I'm standing at this counter with this poor ticket agent, and I'm screaming at her, she has to get us on a flight. And Dave, my Dave, just kind of puts his hand on me. He says, Polly, this is the only person on earth who is trying to help us. Would you please stop? And I have to look at her and thank God I have you. Thank God I have these steps and say how sorry I am that I behave like that. How sorry I am that I behave like that. How sorry I am. I don't know how many times I make amends to you every day. It's just constant. Cause I'm one of these kind of people that I'm on the move. I'm on the move. And I'm working with a man who has Parkinson's disease, who can barely walk and is in a wheelchair. And I'm trying to be on the move. And it's hilarious. And you don't think God's got a sense of humor and there's not some lessons in that? There's some big lessons in that. Some big lessons in that. And I'm so grateful. Because I can guarantee you last year, I would have never dreamed that Dave would ever be at another conference. I would have not dreamed he would ever be at another conference, let alone sitting up here at the podium. So, life's in session, guys. Life's in session. And it's been in session. You know, we thought we'd had some hard times. I mean, we've been through, we got these kids all together and then that worked. James got, he stopped selling dope and stopped drinking and we got him an A, he got an AA. So he got off the worry list. And you had all that stuff going on. We had to file bankruptcy. We lost our son, Mike. He died when he was 42 years old, but he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He died of AIDS. But he was of service till the day he died. He was of service. Took people to the dentist because nobody would touch him. He was of service till the day he died. Life's in session, and it's always going to be in session. And I don't know what's going to be our challenge next. But one of the things that I am really clear about is life is a spiritual classroom. And I am here to learn. And I am here to learn the lessons that I have been assigned. And I know one thing, I'm going to either learn them or I'm going to repeat them. Over and over. And my sponsor Dottie used to say, repeat for correction. Repeat for correction. We're going to keep doing it. And we're going to keep doing it until we do it. Until I see the light. Until I see the light. And I see the gratitude. And every experience that has happened in my life, no matter how much pain it has caused me, no matter how much embarrassment it's caused me, everything that's happened, I needed the lesson. I needed it. So what happens is I do what this step takes, tells me to do. And that's either I take an inventory and look at it. I've had to do a big inventory last year. I mean a big one. And I had to, because what happens is I am a believer, what it says in step three, that our troubles, whatever is bothering me, my troubles are of my own making. And in step 10 and the 12 and 12, it says it is a spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, doesn't matter what it is, there's something wrong with me. And I am not going to be okay, those of you who know Sandy, and I'm not going to be okay until I forgive that person in depth or situation. And we all got to watch Sandy when his daughter was murdered. We got to watch him suit up in Orlando weeks after she had been murdered, and he had forgiven the murderer. Forgiveness is divine. If I cannot forgive, I'm to live with it, not them. I'm to live with it. And I can't afford that. I can't afford that. Doesn't matter if I'm right, if I'm justified. Doesn't matter if any of those things are true. If I have any anger or ill feelings about anyone, I'm going to pay the price. I'm going to pay the price. And I know that to the deepest core of my body today. I know that. So what I do in step 10 is I try the best I can to call myself out on it. I'm grateful I have a husband that is willing to call me out. I have a son that's willing to call me out. I hope Jane gets there, but James is definitely there. Is willing to call me out. Love me enough to tell me when I'm wrong, because I believe what Chuck Chamberlain said. If I knew better, I'd do better. I don't know any better. If I knew better, I'd do better. And I'm grateful that I get to work. I get to take a look at myself 24/7. And then in step 11, it says that step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And everybody's been doing lookup words this weekend. And I just want you to know that I am not a meditator. I'm a moving machine. That's what I am. I pray. I read readings. I talk about God. But I'm not too good at meditating. So when it says in step 11, suggests prayer and meditation. Meditation, when this book was written, meant contemplation. That's what a 1935 book says. So today, since I can't sit Zazen and do for an hour, I'm okay. I'm so happy to the people who can quiet down that much, but I'm not a quieter downer. That's not my makeup. I'm just not a quieter downer. So I suggest through prayer and meditation and we're doing it constantly. I'm constantly talking to God throughout the day. But it says, I love step 11. If you can't get step 11, don't even try to get the rest of the book. Because it says, when we retire at night. And then it says, when on awakening. I mean, nothing could be clearer than step 11. And I want you to know, for years I had those two steps confused, because step 10 talks about all the things it talks about in step 11. And I used to say, well, 10 and 11, you know, they're just kind of alike. They're not alike. 10 is what I do all day long during the day. Step 11 is what I do when I retire at night. I review my day and I try to see, what did I miss? Where was I resentful? Was I selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Did I do that over here and didn't clean it up? Now I got to go clean it up in step 11. That's my do-over. I get to have a do-over. What I missed during the day, I get to pick up at night. And I get to look at it. The other thing I want to suggest is, it's worked for me. It wasn't my idea. It just sort of has happened. But I sponsor a lot of people out of town. And one of the things that has been going on of late, because we're all talking about the big book, I love about the people who are talking about the big book. And one of the biggest people talking about the big book are sitting right here back to back, and that's Joe and Ralph. And they're so good. If you want to hear big book studies, go hear these two. But what happens is we hear a lot of this stuff, and they're hearing a lot of this stuff. And one of the things I'm getting is step 11s from the women I sponsor. They're emailing them to me. And you know what? It's amazing how much better I know these women, and they live somewhere else. It's just fabulous. I know what's going on day to day. It is an amazing tool that I never even thought of it. But I think somebody did, because they know about it, and now I know about it. And that's how we know things. It just gets passed on. Just keep passing it on. Just suit up for duty and pass it on. And then on awakening, so we look over our day. Well, let me go back over. Do we owe an apology? Hopefully I did it in step 10, But maybe I didn't. Maybe I got to take another look. Did I discuss it with another person at once? Not 10 days later or a month later or a year later, because now I'm holding a secret. And secrets, there's an old saying, Alcoholics Anonymous, I've never seen it in our literature, but my secrets will keep me sick. I'm just as sick as my secrets. My secrets. And that goes with thoughts, too. I have thoughts that I keep a secret because they're not nice thoughts. What could we have done better? Were we kind and loving to all? Boy, that's a big order. I have to apologize to Dave every day because he's always saying, I'm always bossing him around and telling him what to do. He says, why are you always so angry at me? And that's the way it's kind of the way I talk. I'm just, let's move. And so I'm constantly having to take a look at how I'm treating other people. These are God's people. And one of the things that I have learned to the core of my being is that God loves Ted Bundy and Adolf Hitler as much as he loves me. He loves them the same. He doesn't love one better than the other. He loves them the same. I don't know about you, but I'm one of these people, I'm self-righteous. I got no better. Self-righteous. On awakening, they have some other things, morbid reflection and so on and so forth, but I want to hurry up. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that we be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. That's a prayer. I say that prayer. If you can't think of a prayer to say in the morning, just say that prayer. I loved different people. James talked about it. Joe talked about it. Say the third step and the seventh step and pick out the prayers. And there's a fabulous one, and the fourth step. God, help me. This is a sick man. It's a sick man. And here I am being mean to them, being impatient. Big character defect. Impatience. We go back to step three and it starts showing us all, letting us know all those character defects. Then we do step four and we get to see more. Like Joe said, you mean there's more there? Yeah. There's more there. More character defects. Keep showing up. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental facilities, which with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Read the book. Simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. It's simple. The actions are simple. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And I don't know about you, but if I'm thinking bad about somebody or if I've got a bad motive, I got a signal all the time. I got a signal. I can feel it. I got a signal. And I was talking with somebody yesterday, and I just said, if you got that signal, just pay attention to it. Just pay attention to that signal. Because I believe that God is always with us. God guides my every thought. God guides it. In thinking out about our day, we face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration. I'm doing a lot of talk. If I'm following the book of Alcoholics Anonymous that is laid out for me to stay sober, I'm praying a lot all day long. Give me a thought. Give me an inspiration. We were talking about that yesterday. Give me a thought. Something will show me, because I'm indecisive. I have a decision to make that I can't make. Help me make this decision. Give me an inspiration. An intuitive thought or a decision We relax. I ask and then just stop, relax, and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. But I think here is where God says we need a sponsor, where Bill says we need a sponsor. Because he says, being still on his, being inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. I am not inspired at all times. I need to talk over my great ideas that come to me with my sponsor. I need to talk to her and find out, is it a great idea or is it truly an inspiration? And by discussing it with another person, I'll usually find out. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, here's a huge promise, be more and more on the plane of an inspiration. We come to rely on it. I come to count on that. Small, quiet voice. I come to count on that. It's always there. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will. And are careful to make no requests for ourselves. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. I want to end. I got two things I want to end with. Last year, in October, Dave was really, really sick. By God's grace, my kids were there, and Jane took care of getting me a caregiver in a rehab center. I needed a caregiver in the hospital. And she helped me do that, and Dave was in a bad way. I have a friend named Vicki, and Vicki said, would you mind if I asked Gary, who's her pastor, to come pray for Dave? And I said, no, that would be wonderful. And Gary came and prayed for Dave. And Dave was in the hospital for 20 days. And Gary kept coming. And Dave was still in the hospital, and Vicki said, how would you like to go to church with me Sunday? Now, I want you to know the Baptist church, I was raised Baptist, and I blame the Baptist church for my absolutely twisted idea of God, that I was going to be punished in hell, that I was born a sinner, and all of this stuff. I mean, those preachers were screaming their lungs out at all that stuff. And the Baptist church has been on every one of my inventories because sometimes I still feel like that. That it's because of something I've done that's caused somebody I love to be in trouble. I mean, if you think that's not arrogance, but that's how I believed, that other people would pay for my sins. That's what I was taught. I believed that. And I believe the Baptist church did that to me. And it's not that Dave and I didn't go to church. We did. We went to non-denominational churches and such as that. And I went to church that Sunday because my girlfriend Vicki asked me to go. And it was her pastor who continued to come see Dave, and I had fallen in love with Gary. And I walked into that church that Sunday morning, and that was a Southern Baptist church. And I've never felt more at home in all my life. And I think God has the greatest sense of humor, absolutely the best sense of humor, because now Dave and I are members of that Baptist church. And if you'd have told me 42 years ago that that was going to happen, I would tell you I will not set foot in there. I may go there for somebody's wedding, but that's going to be about it. I felt they had wronged me by telling me those things. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. Okay, I'm going to end with this. People are often unreasonable and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are honest, people may cheat you. Be honest anyway. If you find happiness, people may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today may be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give your best anyway. For you see, in the end, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Thank you.